You're listening to a podcast from 702.
You're with Clement Maniatella.
702.
So I told you that we would be discussing in this half hour cheap labor and the humiliation of that cheap labor. Whether you talk domestic workers, farm workers, gardeners, security guards, you name it, a lot of these workers have very little knowledge about their rights. So they are often subjected to exploitation, whether it's through low wages, having unfavorable working conditions, long hours of work, no employment benefits. That can be humiliating to one's sense of self and personhood. Not being able to care for your family, not being able, right, to care for yourself. So I want us to look at the impact of this on the people at the receiving end. And what is the responsibility, even moral responsibility, on those who employ them? Because look, it's like we live in this status-driven society that doesn't always value or respect people who do the day-to-day non-sexy work that keeps the society rolling, so to speak. And yes, you've got the minimum wage in place. It's still incredibly low. What's your moral judgment when you've got people working under you? You pay someone a wage you know won't go that far. And you've got the resources to put in extra, but you don't. What does it say about us? Let's bring in Angela Day, who is a clinical psychologist. And I'm going to take your calls as well if you want to join this discussion on 011-883-0702. The WhatsApp line is 072-702-1702. How do you exercise your judgment, right? And maybe you are someone who's been humiliated, right, through cheap labor. I'd like to hear from you. What impact has that done for you, especially in this country with the context that we have? We have sustained generational trauma that has burdened, you can argue, the black man, that has burdened the black woman, and that has resulted in a lot of issues for them. And I wonder what those issues are. If you want to share your experiences, I'm going to take your calls, your voice notes, and your SMSs on 31702. Angela, thank you so much for joining us for this discussion. Good morning. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Compliments. Good morning, Clement. To you and to your listeners.
So when we talk about this kind of humiliation, what are we talking about, and who owns it?
You know, I really like this discussion, and it's very emotive and it's provocative, actually. You know, especially when we have some of the terms, we speak of humiliation. What is humiliation? Cheap labor. What actually is cheap labor? And so when we look at humiliation to start, we're talking about a person's dignity, you know, the injury to a person's dignity and their self-respect. And like you said, who owns that? At any given time, if I am a person that is feeling humiliated, am I not on the receiving end and have any agency in that process of receiving the injury? Or has it completely just been thrown onto me like a blanket? Because then when we look at intergenerational trauma from things like apartheid, we have to then say that whole system was built and derived on the view that Black people were inferior human beings, and therefore they were treated accordingly. That space of inferiority may have intergenerationally impacted people, and how so? So those are some of the things that we need to look at. But the space of humiliation is also constructed in language. So in the English language, humiliation actually means something different than when we speak about shame. So shame actually is when a person feels that they've actually bad, when they're actually deserving of that criticism, when you feel shame.
Hmm.
And that again is different from the space of guilt. Guilt is when you actually feel like you've done something wrong, and that guilt can have a useful aspect to it because it can lead you then to actually creating repair. But the space of humiliation is really a space where someone has thrown your social status, your public image, just lowered you possibly in your own eyes and the eyes of others. And that space can move you towards a space of hate and anger and a space where you want to lash out if you have the potential to, possibly into violence.
Yeah.
That's what humiliation can do to someone.
Yeah. You mentioned a system with regards to the context of apartheid in this country and how black people were seen as inhumane. And unfortunately, that system, especially when it comes to the low wages and the humiliation through cheap labor, that system continues today. What impact or effect does this have on one's personhood who is at the receiving end of this kind of humiliation?
I think there's a generalized black worldview that black men were raised to be the protectors and the providers of their families and the communities and the nation at large. So this whole space has been disrupted. It's been disrupted into a post-apartheid crisis of masculinity. Humiliation, I find, really can be this demoralizing life experience, and it actually reduces self-esteem. So, you know, we can then look at South African labor conflicts and tensions in the work hierarchies. These remain disproportionately a space of violence as workers feel vulnerable, you know, and that same vulnerability was notorious under the apartheid system. But this has only deepened now in unexpected ways. So we find, you know, the forms of workers and their self-understanding. During the apartheid system, they found ways to resist what was going on, even in the space of pacification. But now we're finding that this is being replaced by even more desperate calls of dependence on the grant system and spaces of unemployment. You know, and that's our men. When it comes to the woman, under apartheid, we again look at intergenerational trauma. Because we looked at the woman's dependence on their employers, if they were domestic workers, and the past laws that were happening. There was so much bureaucracy in everyday life regarding the past laws and the possibility of being endorsed out of cities. So you were always under this space of anxiety. You know, all of these things can lead to serious mental health problems. Some of the things that could be happening from the intergenerational trauma to where we're sitting now, located in the space of a world pandemic as well as COVID, is generalized anxiety and depression. And these things can be very common among people who've experienced public humiliation. So, you know, the severe forms of persons who start to look at these interests, we need to look at how this grows within our society and how hurt people hurt other people. Intergenerationally, we're also looking at children, because now we have our parents who maybe turned around and were humiliated. They live in the space of humiliation, the space of dependence. How then do they go on to discipline their own children? How then do they go on to model for their children? You know, so children who've been humiliated by their parents as a form of punishment, they go on to suffer from chronic low self-esteem. You know, they'll compare themselves to other people. They'll judge themselves as inferior. And so it becomes this intergenerational cycle that we cannot deny was introduced during the apartheid era.
And it's so two things. And then I'm going to go to the calls, Angela. One is that, I mean, it looks like we've literally just replicated that system where sometimes you see that someone is doing the work, but you are paying them money that you know doesn't even go that far. Even if you've got resources to pay them extra, but you still don't do that. And the sad part is they have been so humiliated historically that they don't even have the authority, the confidence to sit down with you as the employer and say, I actually think I do way much and I deserve this much. So they've gotten to a point where whatever you give them, they're just going to take it, because historically they've never really had a voice.
100%. But I was reading a report that was, I was actually reflecting on it, that talked about our middle class and how the middle class is being squeezed. So, I mean, it's very obvious that, you know, in a low income household, we're looking at how does one prioritize their non-negotiable expenses? You know, like, for instance, we often think of food, but the reality, according to these reports, are that the priority expenses are transport and electricity before food, you know? And then some of the other expenses in a low income household people look at is debt servicing, scholar transport, education and burial services, household and domestic and personal hygiene products. So all of these spaces we don't actually think of, and we naturally assume that other people have middle class. I'll say middle class because we don't know necessarily who the wealthy are. And there's an assumption the wealthy do have expendable income. But the middle class, which is constantly shrinking in this current environment of high unemployment, I think we need to reframe our relationship with this. I've also, you know, been looking at when we're looking at the domestic workers to change the domestic minimum wage increase and to equalize it with the national minimum wage. And even when they do that, the national minimum wage in and of itself does not properly support a family of four. So are we not, as a country, on some level, perpetuating the indignity, even with a national minimum wage that is not there and cannot support the family as it is? You know, there was a another article I was looking at that talked about today's people are expected to live on a $350,000 a month for those that are unemployed, because so many people are unemployed. So it's not just about the humiliation of those people who are employed. What about those who are graduating from universities and can't find employment, or the feeling that I had a promise of doing X, Y, and Z, and now I'm doing something that I feel is beneath me? You know, how do we navigate those spaces and those thought processes, those anxieties?
I'm going to take a break, Angela. When we come back, we'll continue the discussion. I've got some messages coming on the WhatsApp line. I'll take some calls as well on 011-883-0702. It's going up to 10 before.
Your voice.
Your questions.
Your morning radio with Clement Maniatella.
This is 702.
It's 9 minutes before 11 o'clock. We're talking about the humiliation of cheap labor. Angela Dare is a clinical psychologist, and I want to hear your thoughts, whether you've been at the receiving end, or maybe you want to take from a talk from a position of an employer and what moral judgment you exercise when you are dealing with people in low wages, and how you go about approaching, you know, how you go about approaching that. Reverend Meshack Mashinini is a pastor at Black Man Restoration and Healing Church of Nazarene, who is on the line to us now. Rev, thank you for making time. I actually read your opinion piece. I think it was in the Sowetan, which was really interesting. From the work that you've done and what you've gathered, what's been the impact of this degradation of people through cheap labor? How has that affected how they relate, not only to themselves, but to others?
Good morning, Clement. Thank you for this time. You know, Clement, my starting point, my entry point to this discussion is from a personal point of view. You know, as a pastor, we visit families, we heal communities, we are helping communities. But like, Black men are very affected by these issues you're talking about. You know, for instance, my starting point also is from the book of Jeremiah 30, verse 17, where the word of God says, but I will restore you to wholeness and heal your wounds. You know, Clement, Black men are wounded. Hence, I talk about wounded Black masculinity. Black men are wounded in our country. Black men have been in the forefront in the building of the economy of the country. You know, by 1899, we had 4,000 kilometers of railway line in our country, which was done primarily by Black men. They've contributed to the economy, but they have nothing to show of, you know, of their contribution. So as Black men, I'm treating myself there as a pastor as well. As a Black man, we are carrying wounds, we are carrying woundedness, we are carrying pain. You know, women don't respect Black men today. Children don't respect their fathers. Black men in majority are unemployed. So I believe that, you know, as a church, we are calling that black men must be brought to the center of decision-making in the country.
Reverend Meshack Mashinini, thank you so much for that contribution. I've got your voice notes as well that are coming on 072-702-1702.
Good morning, Clement, and your guest. I'd like to remain anonymous. You know, I'm one of those domestic workers who've worked for a family for almost 5 years. And they never really thought of increasing my wage. And taxes have gone up, I think, 5 times ever since I started working for them. But they're still giving me the same amount over and over again until this year I decided to take a stand. Because they've had kids along the way and I'm stay out. I don't live in their premises. So I think sometimes if we don't stand up, no one else will. Thanks, Clement.
Oh, thank you so much for sending us that voice note. And I'm wishing you the best. And Angela, that's a situation for many people where some don't even have, you know, the strength and the confidence to stand up and say, I'm putting my foot down. The price of living is too high. I'm doing way too much and you have to pay me what my work is worth. But I want us to also talk about the responsibility that employers have as well. So we talk about this humiliation of cheap labor, but the people that are doing the humiliation through these incredibly low wages, what conversation should they have with themselves? What moral judgment should they be exercising?
I'm not quite sure that I'm equipped to answer what moral judgment any human being should be imposing on themselves. Because I think that life is really a journey and a space of learning. So as a society, I think we decide together how we want to conduct society. And I think our laws, especially our constitutional laws, are reflective of exactly that. You know, the Constitution says that there's an inherent right to dignity for all people within our country. And so when that dignity is being breached, who is the police of that space? Who holds people accountable? You know, the lasting effects of humiliation are wide ranging. So often, sometimes, I don't want to use the word, but SHIT blows downhill, you know? So you've got a lot of people going through things and we don't know why people treat people badly. Everybody has their own reasons for doing it. And as important a person that's being subjected to this space of low wage, you know, their choices are few. So then we have to look at locus of control, location of control. Where do I sit? Am I being humiliated by this person, or is there space for me to reframe what is happening to me, especially if I can't renegotiate my fees and circumstances? Is there space for me to reframe my circumstances that even though I'm not earning very much, that I can say to myself, I am contributing to my family and my family support. Yeah. Otherwise, we completely sit in this other space, you know, which is just victimhood. You know, where the person feels that they're absolutely helpless in the face of their challenges. They self-pity themselves and they literally just continue avoiding the situation. So, you know, there's other effects. When a person comes home and they're feeling humiliated, again, you go home and these things go into your family environment. Then maybe you have children who are starting to feel rebellious because on some level, they're looking at their parent and within society, no one's talking about it, but that child or that young adult completely has a sense of the secret humiliation that's going on in society. And their role, their place in it, and that their own helplessness to be able to help their parent or help themselves change their own circumstances. And again, if we continue on these lines of thinking, we perpetuate this helplessness as a victimhood. So we as a community have to come together because, again, studies show that people who get more involved in their communities, you know, who they start to think differently about their groups that they're associating with and the stereotypes that's linked to them, They can raise their self-esteem.
Mm,
they can resist these spaces of humiliation despite the monetary aspect of their challenges.
Yeah. Angela, thank you so much for making time and helping us make sense of the impact of this humiliation through cheap labor. Angela Dare is a clinical psychologist.